Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's Q&R. I am so glad to be here with Pastor Wang and with Pastor Adam, as it's a normal crew.
It feels normal, right?
July was a crazy month for us for Q&R. We were all over the place.
June and July.
I mean June.
Speaking of crazy.
Welcome to this crazy world we live in. But yes, I'm here and I'm with these two guys, and we're so glad to be back to be able to sort of talk and do what we were wanting to do this whole time. It's just been all over the place for the last month or so. So today we're going to talk about Daniel. This summer, we're in this summer series where we're digging into all of these stories we grew up hearing about. And Sunday, both of you all, so for the first time maybe in a little while, we had the same sermon at both places. And so you all shared with us on Daniel. So will one of you all, or both of you all, so just recap a little bit about the story itself.
Right, so this is about 2,600 years ago, 600 years before Jesus, in the time of the Babylonian exile. This is like probably the worst and most defining part of Israel's story in a lot of ways. The exile is when a lot of, honestly, the scriptures are written down and kind of like, the crisis of the people sort of became sort of the way their faith kind of, as a people, kind of came together. A lot happened during that really rough time. And the story of Daniel he's sort of the epitome of the exile. He's probably one of the best and brightest who was taken from Jerusalem in the exile to Babylon. And we think that a lot of, maybe not everybody left Israel during the exile, as it's called. But they certainly took the kings, they took the nobility, they took the smart, the leaders, the smart folks, and the intellectuals or whatever. And so Daniel's kind of brought into, sort of a leadership track in the exile to be assimilated. I think of like the Borg from Star Trek. I don't know if that really, relates to anybody, but you will be assimilated. Right. That's what empires do, right? Like, right. They take people who are different and they try to kind of bring them into conform to the standards of what's really important to in this case the Babylonians. And so the tension in the story is Daniel trying to remember who he is, who God is, staying connected to the story of God, which is what our series is about. So he struggles to do that in terms of how they eat. And I'm in my sermon, version of the sermon, I said, the Babylonians said, we want you to eat our food, meat and alcohol and our regimen. And Daniel's like, no, we'll do the whole 30 thing, eat our kale chips. And they said, well, we're not sure that it's going to work. And they said, just watch us, we'll do better. And they did. And then his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego get kind of caught up in that. And there's a real tension of whether they're going to worship, according to the standards of Babylon, and they're thrown in the fiery furnace. So there's just real, really tense kind of relationship between the empire and Daniel. Daniel is a person of wisdom and interprets dreams for the king and becomes known for that. And he's able to kind of go along with things, right, and kind of live in the tension for a while until that doesn't work anymore. And I think maybe you mentioned that in the sermon where he's kind of tricked, the king is tricked into making a law that would, Daniel's going to have to choose, do I worship God or do I worship the king? And he does what he's been doing all along, going to his room, closing the door, opening a window to Jerusalem and praying three times a day. And so that spiritual sort of rhythm in his life, that habit or discipline or whatever we call it, is a grounding thing for him to remember who he is and who God is and how he's part of God's story. Anything else I'm leave out in that?
No, I think that's it. One thing I talked about was the story starts with the destruction of Jerusalem and being carried off to Babylon. So you get this idea in the beginning that God's people are defeated and that God has been defeated. They carry off articles from the temple and put them in the temple of the Babylonian God. And so the picture is that their God is stronger than the Israelites' God. Mm-hmm. But then the whole rest of the story is the story of God being in control of the story.
Yeah,
and it even says in the first verse there that he handed them over into the hand of the Babylonians. But, the diet's better. At the end of their training, they're smarter. Daniel's the only one who can interpret the dreams. None of the people of Babylonia can. Two times that happens. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, their God is able to deliver them. And so, like on three different
out of the fiery furnace. Right. Yeah.
So, like on three different occasions, Nebuchadnezzar himself says, "Your God's greater than ours." You know, even though it looks like something different, if you just look at circumstances, we're the ones in exile. You're right. The ones who have all the power. But the reality is, our God is in control. He's writing this story. He's taking it where He wants to go. And so, I think there's that sense in our lives that we don't and I think we kind of wonder whether God is in control or not. Is God having His way? Because life gets really hard. And just a recap, that's kind of one of the big things I talked about was...
Well, I'm going to ask you that in a minute.
Okay.
Don't give it away.
I remember saying that, though, like early on in the... Like, as we set up the series back in January for this whole... for this whole year of entering the story, the Bible is a book written by the losers.
Right.
And in a world where if you win, then it must be that your God is more powerful.
Right.
This story is always going against that flow, right? So there's a disconnect between political success or geopolitical, you know, things going on or personal success or whatever that is, and God's story. There isn't a direct correlation.
Right. And you know what's interesting? I just think about this, that when Jesus comes along, He still has to fight against that, even with the Jews. This idea that if you're good, you will prosper, and that your God will prosper you, and if you're bad, you'll be punished for it.
Right.
And so He has to talk them out of that and say that that's not how things work, that there's something bigger and different going on. That whole idea of, you know, the strongest and the best are the one who is most righteous is the one who wins. That's not true. It's not how things work.
Yeah. You know,
there's something else going on.
I'm sorry Megan cut you off. So I just
jumped in
on that.
I appreciate that. That's okay.
No,
she wants to ask her questions.
I want to ask her questions. But first, I want to say I'm sorry to Lou because I forgot him when I started. This is what happens when you don't do this for 6 weeks straight. You know, I just don't know what I'm doing. Y'all, Pastor Lou is back with us, and we are so glad that he is here with us in the comments.
Yes, that's right. And Pastor Lewis is a grandpa again.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Papa is in the house, and he is in the comments, and so jump on it, tell him congratulations, tell him hello, ask him your questions. If it's questions that we can't answer there, we will come back and answer them next week. But Pastor Liv is back.
Don't ask him to see a picture unless you want to see a picture, because he has one at the available all the time.
And it's real precious.
Right.
So, okay, now I'm sorry, Lou. Back to our regularly scheduled programming. okay, so what a lot of folks don't know, maybe not, I don't know, is that we have sermons every Sunday, and you all meet together as a teaching team.
Right.
And there's typically one person that writes, but then the other people, Pastor Cam from Faith, and then Wayne or Adam, I guess it's just the three of you all. You all sort of make it your own, in a sense. And so this week when we did Daniel, it wasn't that you're not hearing the exact same thing at both places, is basically what I'm trying to say.
Right.
But this week at Daniel, you all both took it a little bit differently. Adam, you sort of went one way with it. And Wayne, this is why I cut you off, is because you went somewhere a little bit differently. And so, Adam, why don't you,
She's so confident at how good at what you're going to say is that she wants to hold that to the end.
I'm going to keep on.
Man, it is so suspenseful.
What did he say? Stick around to the end and you'll find out. But no, we're taking turns. Adam went, and then you went, and now Adam gets to tell us. Where his sermon went. So anyway, Adam, share with us a little bit about where you're.
I don't even know what to do now. Well, I guess one thing that I thought a lot about was what grounded Daniel's life. And one of the things that I said in the sermon as I reflected was, you know, when somebody has that extreme of a circumstance in their life that we would call a really bad thing, sometimes that gives someone a real clarity about what's important, what's needed. I remember when we had some of our friends through Phoenix Rising, I think it was right the Sunday after one of the conferences that we did here with Phoenix Rising on human trafficking. We had some survivors in worship with us, and they were really engaged in worship at 9:30. And I was talking to them at the end and said, I really appreciated you all being here, appreciated the way you worshiped. And
And she said, we don't have the luxury of kind of not taking this seriously. We know our need for God.
Yeah.
And we're so thankful to him for what he's done for us that we can't help but praise. And, you know, I think that's a good message for those of us who kind of, and good portion of the time, kind of look at the world differently. Like, things are going well. And then if it goes bad, then we feel like that's the, you know, like, what happened there, right? Daniel doesn't have that. Daniel's like, my world could fall apart if I don't have this connection to God.
Yeah, that's good.
And so what he does, everything that he does, is really about maintaining that lifeline. So I think the way I said it was, Daniel knew that if he didn't stay connected to God, that his life would fall apart. So he goes to his room, closes the door, prays three times with an open window to Jerusalem to remember that he's part of God's story. And that's why, so I'd spent a lot of time talking about, that's why we do the things that we do. So, and we get confused about this in kind of a Christian culture, kind of like where everybody's supposed to pray. Everybody, you're supposed to go to church. You're supposed to, you know, this is what, you know, good Christian boys and girls do. That's not why Daniel did it. Daniel did it because he knew he needed God. And I think we could take a lesson from that. Like, so coming to church or praying or whatever spiritual habits that form us, we need to recognize the power of those, not as a should or have to thing, but because we probably ought to realize that there's a lot of forces at work in the world that would tear our lives apart.
Right.
And we want to cooperate with God's grace to do the things that put our lives back together. And that's what Daniel was doing. I think we get confused about that, and it's easy to kind of feel like, oh, I should, like, feel guilty, like I didn't do this or do that. Or to kind of like make, like, we're going to be like spiritual goal setters. So like, okay, I'm going to do this or this. Read through the Bible in a year. Hold on. We are doing that, right? We're doing that together,
some of us fell off the wagon.
But like, honestly, how many of us have said, okay, I'm going to do this, and it's really about how great spiritual we're going to be, and then, like, you know, a weekend, you know, it all falls apart, right? Like Peter, when Jesus, like, you're going to betray me or deny me, and Peter's like, no, not me, ever. Like, we overestimate ourselves. Yeah. And so I told a story about how when I did a renewal leave, which is a spiritual practice, you know, 2 years ago, where I went off for 5 weeks, got away from church people, didn't do sermon prep, didn't have weddings or funerals, and those, and just was really trying to connect with God. And so I was like, for day one, I'm going to open my Bible, and I was like, I'm going to read through the Psalms. This is this many days, so I'm going to divide it all out. This is how many Psalms I have to read every day. And I started with Psalm 1, and I got stuck there, like, for 5 weeks.
Right.
You know, I just kind of had to keep coming back to that same scripture and found, like, man, there's something in not doing it because you're checking off the list or because I'm going to get through the Bible or as important as those things could be. It helped me stay in touch with, and that psalm in particular says, like, happy are those who don't take the path that sinners tread or sit in the seat of scoffers or kind of go this way, but their delight is in the law of the Lord, and on it they meditate day and night. They are like trees planted by streams of water and bear their fruit in their season, and their leaves don't wither. And it was like, that's the very thing I need. And in the running around and the busyness of doing ministry and doing God things, you know, that was the very thing that I'd forgotten,
right?
So it was like Psalm 1 got to stop me in my tracks and made me get in touch with what is this is really about, why we do what we do.
You mentioned it this morning in one of our other meetings, the thin places.
Right.
When I think about the means of grace or the Christian disciplines, it helps me to see them that way, so that reading my Bible is one of those where it's a thin place where there's a smaller separation between me and God's presence or experiencing it.
Heaven and earth kind of come, the place where heaven and earth are like the thin places, like the division which shouldn't be there anyway,
right,
is thinner because right. and not because God's different, right. but because we're
distracted or
we're
whatever.
Different. Yeah.
So this is a place where I intentionally put myself where the space between my attention on Him and being part of what He's doing is thinner. And when it's not that, when it's just a habit or a duty or getting through it, then it's a misuse of those moments.
Right.
And so prayer is the same way. When it is that thin place when we experience God's presence and it helps us to recognize that there's not a separation between us, then it's positive and it's good.
That's good.
But when we're just praying because we have to or have it or whatever. And, you know, I used to think that, well, yeah, there's going to be days when it doesn't feel good and when I don't sense God's presence, so I just have to push through those. And maybe not. You know, I'm not saying that. Maybe you do. I don't know. But for me, it's not pushing through those, but it's recognizing that this is not the place where I am recognizing God's presence in my life at this moment. Mm-hmm. And so maybe, you know, God is present. He is working. So maybe there's some other thinner places for me right now. Maybe it's serving my neighbor at a hotel, or maybe it's in worship, or maybe it's in fasting or something else.
And it's okay to say, I'm different than so-and-so, who seems to be able to go and read their Bible, and like, oh, we're so happy that you're so spiritual, but most of us regular people, kind of, so there's a great book called Spiritual Pathways. It kind of talks about how we're all different, and there are like, I don't know, 9 or 12 kind of different ways that, you know, some people need to be out in nature more, or outside more, like, what is the thin place for you? Because God's present, God's at work, God's faithful to His story. So what helps us to have our window open to Jerusalem, and and that's so, like, we don't need to be Daniel, we need to be Adam.
Yeah.
Right.
The way that God relates to, and we talk about people having different gifts and different calls and different personalities, but then we try to kind of do like the Empire does. We try to conform people, assimilate them into one model, when there are a lot of thin places in the world that we can discover, I think.
And I think, so for me, it's as much about the way we see ourselves in the world. And so, kind of this wrap up my part of the sermon, I said maybe we all ought to think of ourselves like Daniel, as exiles from our home, and that the key is to find a way to get to the place where we can have an open window to where we're from and who we are. And and so, like, in a world where some of our practices tear us apart, then we're doing the things that hold us together.
Right.
So in a world of materialism and greed, we practice simplicity and generosity and giving, and in a world where power and control get rewarded, we just reward and practice service and humility. And that's where you start to see, like, oh, this is why to push against those forces of the empire that want to assimilate us into whatever the kind of watered down culture that isn't God's, you know, God's not pulling us into God's story, but in fact maybe tearing us apart. In a world that worships sex, we practice intimacy and fidelity and celibacy and chastity. Those are things that not because we're going to hell if we, you know, break some sexual ethic. It's because those were made for deep relationships, and that's what, you know, that can do for us. And I kind of went off on travel sports. I mean, like, we're big into sports in our family. We're traveling. We're going to practices. But it's so easy to let those things take over and kind of get assimilated in without any question into, like, should I be doing this or that? And so we've tried to say we're gonna be involved in those things, but we're going to be in church. We're not because you're supposed to, but because we need to. And I don't want the main thing shaping my kids' life only to be swimming or baseball. I want God's word kind of planted in their hearts because we need that. And that kind of, it just changes why you do what you do.
We need those relationships.
The community.
Help us discover God's presence in our lives. And we need those kinds of relationships that remind us of who we are.
Right. That's right.
And where our value
lies. Our identity. I think Daniel's big struggle was keeping his identity.
Right.
And
he
needed
point.
To do that. Yeah. Well, if we don't stop talking, Megan,
I know,
we're not getting to Wayne's.
But I have one question that I have to ask before that you all sort of thought, and if you're watching, I hope this helps you because I had this question, so I'm assuming that there are other people that have this question. It's So when you all were talking about the thin spaces, right, and, you know, these daily practices and how everything's different. So for like the, for like me, I'll say me, the people that are watching this, like how do you, like what do you recommend for us to, like, to figure out what
to
that thing
out,
is, right? You know, because
yeah.
it's like, you know, when I preach, I said, you know, when I read the Bible, a lot of times it's been that task oriented. And it took mm-hmm. me preparing to preach on Ruth to dig deeper into Ruth,
right,
but
right.
you know, or the praying, it's like, oh, I have to pray because right. it's what I do before I go to bed, or
yeah.
it's what I do when mm-hmm. I get up in the morning. And it's, so it's like, how do you find that,
what are those moments when you, where you are, what are you doing when you know God is present,
right? Go back and think
right.
about when it did work,
right.
like what was it. And you
yeah.
can't, it's not a formula,
right,
but you start to see patterns, like
right.
oh
yeah.
this is what, like, I feel closer
yeah.
to God, or I got it right when
yeah in this relationship, or in this conversation,
mm-hmm.
or when I was studying to preach,
mm-hmm.
I sensed God helping me.
Going
or when I was
study.
Preaching, or
yeah.
yeah, or when I was
serving
in some capacity, or with people who, you know, have certain needs, and I was able to be part of what God was doing in their lives. When are those moments that you recognize that you were participating in God's presence?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's for people when
yeah.
they're alone. Sometimes it's when they're, because people
right.
are different.
And your personality will give you some
right.
clues on that.
Yeah.
If you're more introverted, then like getting away and in quiet
right.
are going to be more natural.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Not that extroverts don't need to do
right.
that too.
Right.
If you're more extroverted, then you're probably communal kind
right.
of things are going to,
you
know,
you experience his
presence.
You
get
yeah.
energy from being around
right.
people, whether
yeah.
that's serving together or talking in a
right.
group together, or
right.
or whatever.
Just listening to somebody, being part of what God is. When are those moments when you knew you were part of what God was doing?
I love it. I hope you like it too.
Place.
Yeah. And the book Celebration of Discipline and that Spiritual Pathways book kind of give some categories, you know, where people tend to fall. And that can be helpful if you read that from this standpoint,
right.
not of like, oh, I got to do all these things.
All of them, but
right.
hey,
just like, oh,
you
know, when
yeah.
you start getting a little bit deeper. And
yeah.
the discipline of celebration, I think, kind of goes
yeah.
across all of it. So
right.
giving thanks.
Yeah.
At meal times,
yeah.
it's not because you got to bless the food. The food's already blessed. It's that we got to recognize the blessing
right.
that it already is.
Yeah.
And that's just the tip of the iceberg, God's provision. Mm-hmm. So being grateful and thankful and joyful about what we have as a practice, just, you know, like in the book Tattoos on the Heart, he says, there's a guy who says, God created it because he thought we would enjoy it.
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
That we might enjoy it,
right.
and like,
yeah,
that kind of runs through everything. Gaining the ability to stand in awe of each other and
right.
of God and
yeah.
the gift that is this day. There's a lot to that.
Yeah.
Laughing and then having joy.
Yeah. yeah.
In ordinary stuff. Okay,
right.
we gotta get. To
okay. So, but that was important. I think
that
some folks
important.
Are like, oh, but
question.
Yeah, that's real great
that
for you
book.
Pastors to talk about how the thin spaces are. Like, what are we
What's,
supposed to do?
How do
right?
I get to them?
How do
how
I,
do
I
find
that?
One of those?
Yeah.
And so that's fantastic. And hopefully Lou was able to type those in. I'm sure he was in the comments.
He's
so
already
that
on.
Folks know what he's doing. But anyway, Wayne,
yes.
you preached on Daniel. I heard you because that's where I was. And so... One of the things, you can talk about all of it, but the big takeaway for me in being a part of like hearing it was that you talked about how God created us to do hard things.
Yeah.
I say all the time, like, we can do hard things, but I never thought about it in the sense of God created me to do
right.
hard things. And so
yeah.
tell us about your take on Daniel.
Well, Daniel struggled to keep his identity, to figure out how to relate where he was, to be faithful. He was in a really hard place. And the scripture, a lot of more written when they were by the losers who were in exile, trying to figure out what was going on. And, you know, the bottom line is life was hard for them. Life is hard for us. And as my favorite philosopher, John Wayne, says, life is hard. Life is harder if you're stupid. So I'm not sure how that fits, but I needed to quote.
But you had to put that in there,
right? Yeah. But I think that God created us to do hard things, not because he knew we would mess up, but because he knew that things would be messed up. And so the fact that life is hard doesn't mean I've done the wrong things. It's not necessarily my fault. It's not necessarily anybody's fault. It's just life in this world. And I think God knew that when he made us, that this is how it was going, the direction it was going to go. It says Jesus was, you know, the Lamb crucified from the foundation of the world. And so when God created us, he made us in his image. Who is stronger or braver than God? Who is better equipped to do hard things than this God who loves us so much that he dies for us? And so if we were made in his image, I think we were created to do hard things, to live in dark places and dark times. Those are not exceptions from God's presence in our lives. Those are the places, like those ladies talked about, those are the places where we discover it. We come to realize it. But those are not detours from God's will in our life. Daniel's time in the lion's den, he was created for that. That from the beginning, God made it where we can do what we have to do, what life demands of us. Grace is sufficient.
And he's with us, so God's presence and our connection to that allows us to do hard things versus living like life. Everything's good, and then the diversion. And so like a sort of a modern way of reading the Bible is, why does bad things happen to good people? And we have choked the life out of Scripture, honestly, trying to make it answer that question. That the Scripture never, that's our question. The Bible is written not from kind of relatively well-to-do people who wonder why sometimes bad things happen to them, but by people who are hanging on by a thread in life or death and finding that God is there. And so we just have to acknowledge that sometimes we come from a different place. Or, as Jesus said, blessed are those who mourn or who are, you know, are peacemakers, who are caught in the middle. The very things, the places where we think that excludes us from God's story are the very entry points to that story. And Daniel's a great example of that.
Yeah, next week we're going to be talking about Esther, which is another great example of this idea that this challenge for us that I think is really important is that this story is not about me. Not about comfort, not about prosperity, not about getting my way. It's not measured by how my life turns out. This story is measured by something much bigger. And so Esther has this opportunity to be part of a story out of a really dark, difficult place that is the moment where she has the opportunity to be part of God's plan, God's story. And so we have to stop beating ourselves up or hating our lives because they're difficult. We were made for this. This is what God created us to do and equipped us, and Jesus died so that we might be able in these moments, just like Daniel was. When the moment came, he was sufficient for it. God equipped him for that. And so if we can see all of our lives as part of this story that God is writing, I think it changes how we deal with our difficulties and how we define them and label them. Even.
I love it.
It's good stuff.
I love it. And we are right on time. So, thank you all so much for joining us for Q&R today. If you had questions on Daniel, you can email those to us at questions@broadwayunited.org, and we can sort of jump back and highlight those next week. But this Sunday, we will be hearing about Esther from both of you all, right? And so we will come back next Wednesday at noon, and we will be sort of highlighting about Esther. So if you have questions on Sunday morning from the sermons, or you just sort of have these questions brewing about her and this story anyway, make sure to email those to us. We would love to be able to maybe answer some of your questions next Wednesday when we are sort of rehashing that story. So have a fantastic week, and we will see you right back here next Wednesday at noon for another session of Q&R. Bye.
Bye, guys.